Hi, welcome back to another episode of You, the Mother Podcast by Abby Williams, a space dedicated to supporting, empowering, and connecting all parents in all seasons of parenthood. You can find more supportive content over on Instagram at You, the Mother, and be sure to check out youthemother.com, where you can reach out to work with me one-on-one or sign up for my group coaching. I just launched an amazing new project with three other trauma-informed experts, Maggie Nick, Chaz Lewis, and Logan Cooper. The Parenting with Trauma Project, the free workshop, is now available. I'll be linking it in the description of this podcast. It's titled, Stop Trying to Be the Perfect Parent. Messing up is part of being a generational cycle breaker. I know that it feels so overwhelming being on a healing journey, breaking generational cycles, working on yourself and parenting your children. And there's so many times when some of that guilt, shame, oh my gosh, am I gonna mess up my children the way that some things were done unto me? All those things creep in. We talk about it, we normalize some of those feelings, and we help you navigate out of some of those things. The full Parenting with Trauma workshop will be available next Monday, and it has 22 on-demand videos that will help you understand what generational trauma is, discipline without hurting. There's so much parenting with rage, communicating boundaries with your extended family. We talk about the mother wound, the father wound, navigating dysfunctional family systems. We teach you how to self-regulate and co-regulate, healing your inner child and reparenting. There's so many videos and they are so, so important. They're so good. So I hope that you go check that out if you are on a healing journey, if you are a cycle breaker, if you are recovering from trauma. The trauma is not your fault, but the healing is our responsibility. And I so believe in all of you to do that work. So check out the link in the description of this podcast and make sure that you go check out the free workshop, which is available now. And in this week's episode, we are talking about baby-led weaning with Katie Farrow. Katie is on a mission to help parents and caregivers give their babies a safe start to solid foods without spoon feeding. Katie is a registered dietitian, mom of seven. She has quads, twins, and a singleton, a baby-led weaning expert, and the host of a top-rated parenting podcast called Baby-Led Weaning Made Easy. In addition to her work educating tens of thousands of parents about baby-led weaning, Katie is an associate professor of nutrition at the University of California, San Francisco, Graduate School of Nursing, and an assistant clinical profession of nutrition at the University of San Diego School of Nursing and Health Science. She is a lecturer in the Exercise and Nutrition Science program at San Diego State University and has authored a number of textbooks and chapters on clinical and infant nutrition. Not only is Katie super busy, she is here to talk to us all about baby-led weaning and making the transition to solid foods. She teaches us what baby-led weaning is, the benefits of baby-led weaning. We talk about what foods to start with, how we can do baby-led weaning safely. I talk about some of my journey with baby-led weaning, going back in time a little bit and navigating that with some of the older generation that maybe don't know what baby-led weaning is. We had a lot of conversations with the grandparents in our life around baby-led weaning, and there was a lot of feelings how to navigate some of that. So if you're going through some of that, we talk about that in this episode as well. You can find Katie over on her podcast, wherever you're listening to this podcast, Baby-Led Weaning Made Easy. You can also find her on Instagram and Twitter at Baby-Led Wean Team. She's also on YouTube, Pinterest, TikTok, and LinkedIn. I'll link all of those in the description of this podcast. And you can find her on her website, fortifiedfam.com. And be sure to check out the links in the description of this podcast because there is a 1-hour free online video training that she is providing the listeners today. And it's at fortifiedfam.com/youthemother. I hope that you enjoy this episode. And if you do, please be sure to leave a 5-star rating and review. Your support here on the podcast always means the world to me. And I so appreciate you being here. So let's get started in supporting you, the mother. Katie. Welcome to You the Mother podcast. I am so excited that you are here joining us today. I hold baby-led weaning near and dear to my heart. And we just packed up the crib from our last baby this past weekend. And I'm so emotional and having all the feels that there are not going to be any more babies. But I'm so excited to gift this knowledge to all the other mamas in this community. So thank you so much for joining me. Tell my listeners a little bit about yourself.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm so glad you're interested in this topic. And I know a little bit about your story. So I'm excited to chat about how your experience was doing baby-led weaning with your three youngest. I know for myself, when I had my first baby, I was like a lot of moms. Like, you were in the pre-internet era. And I was like pretty much pre-social media. I mean, Instagram was very new. And as a registered dietitian, I was like, oh, I just do what my doctor said to start solid foods. And when my oldest was 5 months of age, he was like, feed her rice cereal. And I was like, she can't really sit up on her own. Doesn't really appear to like having this gruel shoved down her throat. And honestly, my daughter just hated being spoon fed. And our mealtimes quickly dissolved into this downright battleground. And I felt like she hated being fed. And then she hated me too. And I was like, what? Like, what did I was feeling
I'm
like
failing as failure. A mother.
I'm feeling like, what kind of mom can't feed her own baby? And what kind of dietitian mom at that? So at the height of our feeding frustration, my husband and I found out that I was pregnant with quadruplets. And now we had been doing fertility treatment. So the potential for multiples was there. I knew that, but I was not expecting four babies. And I remember the first time I saw them all in that ultrasound, I thought, like, how am I going to feed four babies at once when I can't even feed the one baby I have at home right now? So fast forward, the quads were born at 34 weeks and they were in the NICU, you know, growing, getting stronger. And we were feeding the babies and people would come. And I remember one of my colleagues who was a dietitian who had a baby the same age, she was kind of bragging, oh, my baby eats so well. And I'm like, oh, mine hates me and won't eat food. And she's like, then why don't you try this thing called baby-led weaning? And I was like, baby linguine? Like, what are you talking about? I've never heard of this. She's like, oh, you feed your baby real foods. You don't have to force feed them by spoon. There's no mealtime battles. There's no short order cooking. I was like, this sounds too good to be true. So had a lot of downtime on my hands there in the NICU. And I also am a college nutrition professor. So some of my infant feeding colleagues were like, you know, you actually, this baby-led weaning thing, there is some real research behind it to support it. And I was like, then I'm going to learn everything about it I can. But at that time in 2016, there were no good resources about how to do baby-led weaning, what it is and why it's good, but like, how do you actually make lamb safe for your 6-month-old to eat? How do you make whole grains so that the baby can eat it before they have their pincer grasp? How do you safely introduce allergenic food? So when the quads turned 6.5 months adjusted age, we kind of went whole hog into baby-led weaning. A lot of trials and errors and tears, but we figured it out. And I realized by the time they turned one, they had eaten 100 different foods. And if you contrast that to conventional spoon feeding, where most babies have only had 10 or 15 foods, and then you lose those 10 or 15 foods to picky eating in the second year of life. With this 100 foods approach, I realized, oh my gosh, these babies can eat so many more foods than we give them credit for. And to be honest, that just the transformational experience of doing baby-led weaning with the quads was really so life-changing. I actually ended up shifting the entire focus of my nutrition career to focus exclusively on baby-led weaning. Then when the quads were 18 months, I wanted to have one more, but we ended up having twins. So I ended up having seven kids in 3 years. So like, you spread yours out. I just jammed it all in there. So we had seven kids, three and under, but at that time I was doing baby-led weaning full time and my twins were born. I kind of refined this whole 100 first foods idea, turned it into a digital program. Yeah. And now we've helped tens of thousands of families give their babies a safe start to solid foods using baby-led weaning, by getting them to eat 100 foods before they turn one. And I show them how to do that. So the whole premise of the work that I do is showing families how to make food safe for babies, because they can eat so many more foods than we give them credit for. It's just about, hey, you're a new parent. You don't know that babies can't eat steak. Like, I will show you though how you can make different cuts of meat safer for your baby to eat.
And it's really fun, like, experiencing that mealtime where you're all together eating the same food and enjoying the
Because
food.
The alternative is hell. So like, making different foods for different children and then like, no.
Or just like having to be like stuck there spoon feeding you before I can feed myself. You know what I mean? Or you're spoon feeding and then I'm taking a bite real fast. I'm spoon feeding. I'm taking a bite real fast. It's just so chaotic. I hated it. I hated that mealtime. But I feel like for my first, he's going to be 13 this summer. So that was before the, you know, before Facebook had mom groups, before there was Instagram, before any of these like social media platforms what they are today. And so I feel like I just didn't know back then. And then my second child was born in 2016 too, where I started baby-led weaning. And
I don't know. I feel like for me, I was working full time. I was in grad school. I was in my final year of grad school. And I'm like, I just don't have time for this. It like really came down to a time.
I also
thing.
Don't have money to buy $3 and $4 pouches, which are not only developmentally inappropriate, but nutritionally incomplete.
Yeah.
And some families are doing 3 or 4 of those a day and thinking it's real food. Like, so the alternative and what we're kind of taught, especially through marketing, social media, is like, oh, well, you just graduate from breast milk and then you shove pouches in their mouth. Like, no, you don't.
No,
like,
gross.
I always tell parents, like, what do you think cave mama fed cave baby back in the day before there was an entire aisle of pouches at Target?
So like, that's kind of what my pediatrician said. So my pediatrician is like my parents' generation. She's older. And we got a lot of pushback from the grandparents. All the grandparents that would feed my baby-led weaning kids were like, what the heck is this? This is so unsafe. We are not for this. It would freak them out. But my pediatrician was like, what do you think that they did, you know? And not even like super long ago.
No.
You know, like baby
prior
food
to the advent
pretty,
of commercial baby food.
It's new.
It's only around since the beginning part of the 20th century.
Yeah.
Parents have always fed modified versions of the same foods their babies eat.
Yeah.
Just like we overcomplicate everything. You don't have to go buy special foods in special pouches and your baby sucks on plastic. Like that's not how children learn how to eat.
Yeah. And it is just like it's so much easier. And I was able to get through grad school and feed my child and it was so much better. And then I had the three.
And can I ask about the grandparents, did they eventually come around to like, oh, wait a minute, when these kids come over to my house and can eat anything, it's way better than me having to spoon feed baby food.
Not really. So because my nanny is also of that generation as well. So I had a lot of this older generation helping me with my kids. And she was super flipped out about it. Our parents were all super flipped out about it. I don't really feel like any of them came around. I don't think that that would be the word. But they would do certain foods with them. And then there was certain
And that's a perfect
that
recommendation.
Like,
that's
no,
what we say
right,
to do.
Right.
We say, mom, it's going to be mom. Yeah. Mom, 99.9% of you listening are mom.
Yeah.
You're the primary feeder.
Yeah.
You've been keeping the baby alive for the first 6 months of life with breast milk or formula.
Right.
And you're going to be the one who continues to offer the food.
Yeah.
You get comfortable with a few simple starter foods that your baby can eat, like your party trick foods.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're the one who introduces new foods. You can't expect daycare or nanny or grandma to do the new foods. You do the new foods. We teach a 5-step feeding framework where you introduce 5 new foods a week.
Yeah.
And mom, the primary caregiver, they need to be the one doing that. But once your baby gets a few foods under their belt and you're really comfortable with that, then you take the – that's when you can start looping other people in.
Right.
Hey, dad, come here and check this out.
Right.
Oh, my God, I'm going to choke on the food. No, he's not. I fed the baby this food 20 times.
Right.
And they start to – wow. Oh, they're not going to choke and die. Because also, your listeners should know there's no higher risk of choking with a baby-led approach compared to conventional adult-led spoon feeding, provided that the parents are educated about lowering choking risk. And there is so much misinformation on social media about baby-led weaning. It's why it's important to be getting your infant feeding advice from a credentialed feeding expert and a dietitian or someone who specializes in this.
So let's like kind of break it down. I guess like let's start from the beginning. When is it an appropriate age to be introducing baby-led weaning? What are some signs that we need to be looking for when our baby is ready?
That's a wonderful question because a lot of where parents go wrong is when they succumb to the pressure to start solid foods early. So most babies, we talk about all babies can have infant milk, right? Breast milk or formula.
Right.
And breast milk and formula, infant milk is what I'll call it for the rest of this episode, is sufficient to meet your baby's needs for the first 6 months of life.
Mm-hmm.
There is absolutely no reason why you should introduce solid foods prior to that period because they don't need it, right? And now we're actually moving into an era where, you know, the AAP, the World Health Organization, AA family physicians, they all say exclusive breastfeeding for 6 months of age. So when they also say, sometimes the pediatricians will do this out the other side of their mouth, and also start solid foods between 4 and 6 months of age, I think, no, that's an anti-breastfeeding message. You tell a mom of a 4-month-old baby to start solid foods, her breast milk supply drops. The baby becomes less interested in that. And the baby should be living sustained solely on breast milk until 6 months of age. So we talk about the importance of waiting until the baby is ready. So nutritionally, they don't need anything prior to 6 months of age. From a physiological standpoint, we're looking for the other reliable signs of readiness to eat. The most important one, in my opinion, as someone who does this work exclusively, is the ability for the baby to sit relatively unassisted, independently. It doesn't happen right on their 6 month birthday. Some babies are 6 months plus 1 week, 6 months plus 2 weeks, even 6 months plus 3 weeks before they're sitting on their own. But if your baby is slumped over and doesn't have the core strength to support their trunk and their neck and their head, mm-hmm. they cannot swallow anything except infant milk safely. So you've got to have that 6 month or 6 month adjusted age if your baby is born prematurely, plus being able to sit on your own. Those are really important. When those two happen, everything else clicks and your baby's ready to start. You just because you can shove a spoon of pureed rice cereal down a baby's throat at 4 months doesn't mean you should.
Yeah.
And if your babies were born prematurely, that adjusted age is really important. So for the quadruplets, for example, they were born 6 weeks early.
Yeah.
And when they turned 6 months, you can bet every grandma in my ecosystem was like, you need to feed those babies. They're 6 months. They're not 6 months.
Yeah.
They were 6 weeks premature. So they were essentially like 4.5 month olds at 6 months.
Right.
They couldn't sit up on their own. Right. We waited until they were 6 months plus 6 weeks.
Right.
That was their 6 month adjusted age.
Right.
That's when they started sitting on their own. That's when they started needing nutrition outside of breast milk or formula. But they don't need 100% of their nutrition from food. You have like 6 months, between 6 to 12 months, for your baby to practice learning how to eat. So if I can encourage your listeners to do anything, it's to back away from being worried about how much your baby is eating.
Yeah.
And remember that your baby needs a lot of time to learn how to eat. And that's the opportunity that you're affording them in that important weaning period, which starts at 6 months of age when baby's getting all their nutrition from infant milk. And at 12 months of age, baby can be getting most of their nutrition from food. You've got 6 months to get there. It's a lot of practice, and practice makes progress.
That's a really important perspective shift, I think, for a lot of parents. You know, I think that the messaging is just backwards. Yeah. So I guess, like, what are some foods that we can be starting with? You know, my baby is 6 months old. They're sitting unassisted. They're not doing the tripod or sitting slumped over. They're sitting up. They're strong. What are some good first foods that we should be introducing?
So it's important to note that there's no right or wrong foods.
Yeah.
I mean, there's definitely some foods we avoid because of their choking risk foods. So we do a ton of education about reducing choking risk mm-hmm. and for parents to understand the difference between gagging and choking. But when it comes to the foods that you pick for baby-led weaning, the key is we just avoid anything hard, crunchy, or crispy. We don't do any of those foods. Those are a huge choking risk. But any foods that are soft, we cut them in the shape about the size of your adult pinky finger. And sometimes parents are like, wait a minute. Aren't they going to choke on it? I'm going to cut the food up really small because I don't want my baby to choke. Well, cutting the baby's food up very small when they've never had anything in their mouth except infant milk, if they can get that food into their mouth, which by the way, they can't because they don't have their pincer grasp yet. So if they can't pick it up and put it in their mouth, we don't put things in baby's mouth. Putting anything in a baby's mouth, including a spoon, can be a choking hazard. We actually offer those longer pieces of food mm-hmm. because they use their whole hand or their palmar grasp to rake and scoop the longer strips of food up and into their mouth. And as long as the baby is the one driving the eating experience, that is baby-led weaning. So foods that are soft, the three easiest foods to start with are avocado, banana, and sweet potato.
Yep.
We do avocado on day one. We do banana on day two. We do sweet potato on day three. I teach that five-step feeding framework where, yeah, you can do those simple starter foods for the first few days, but on day four, we move you right into your first meat. If your family eats meat, I can show you how we make meat safe for babies to eat because they need those iron-rich foods, and they're getting those textures and the different flavors and the tastes, and you can make these foods safe for your baby, and we do that by doing one new food a day. Do not have to wait 3 to 5 days between new foods.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that's an old wives' tale that still gets perpetuated by many doctors. There's absolutely no data to support that.
Yeah.
And I know our parents, that you'd worry like, oh, well, what if they have an allergic reaction? Well, if your baby is going to have an allergic reaction, it occurs within minutes and up to no more than 2 hours following ingestion.
Yeah.
It's not like you feed your baby egg and 2 days later they barf and you're like, oh my gosh, they're allergic to egg. That's not how food allergies work. So we need to go fast by taking advantage of the flavor window when the babies will like and accept a wide variety of foods. And it's perfectly safe to offer one or even more than one new food a day as long as it's not one of the big 9 allergenic foods. We do build in a little pad around those to observe for reaction, but there's only 9 of them.
Yeah. And I think that there's only one food that we should avoid in that first year. Am I right?
What?
Honey.
Well, there's a couple other ones, but honey, we definitely do not offer to babies prior to one. That has nothing to do with choking risk.
Right.
It's because of the risk of infant botulism.
Right.
But also honey is an added sugar. So we don't do any added sugars for babies, the AAP recommends avoiding added sugars until age two. So all these baby foods that you see with added sugar in them are absolutely asinine, because any food you're going to feed your baby, if you read the package, it should say 0 grams of added sugar. And if it doesn't, don't feed it to your baby. Yeah. So honey being an added sugar, we stay away from because it's added sugar, but also because of the potential for botulism.
Right. What were some other ones that we stay away from?
A lot of the other foods on our, you know, foods not to feed list, a lot of them have to do with choking hazard and choking risk. So obviously, you know, things like hard, you know, people say apples, Katie, apples are a huge choking risk. Yeah, hard, crunchy, raw, crispy apples are a huge choking risk. Right. But you can peel an apple, core an apple, slice the apple, poach the apple in order to make it soft, offer strips of apple about the size of your adult pinky finger, season it with cinnamon or nutmeg, whatever you want. Your baby does not have to eat bland food. Right. The baby can pick up that apple and feed it to themselves. So you could offer an apple that's super dangerous if it's hard, crunchy, raw, or crispy, or you could offer super safe.
Yeah.
So it's the preparation of the foods that really matters. And that's what we focus on, is showing parents how to make those foods safe.
Yeah.
And then there are foods that, like, for example, rice cereal. Mm-hmm. Every major health body recommends against the use and the regular use of rice-containing foods for babies. In moderation, it's fine. But because of the potential for arsenic toxicity, it's a heavy metal that causes cognitive delays and problems in babies. We don't want babies. Even if your food culture involves eating rice every day, that's fine for you because you are an adult. A very small baby who's having constant exposure to a food with a heavy metal in it every day at this very period in their life where they're growing rapidly and absorbing all these nutrients, including bad things like arsenic, nope, we don't do those foods every day. So we're really recommending against the use of iron fortified or any white rice cereal, to be honest. There's many other sources of whole grains that are naturally occurring sources of iron that babies can safely eat. And then animal foods also have iron if your family eats those foods.
I think it was my pediatrician that told me not to do rice cereal. And she kind of based like the nutritional value to like a bag of potato chips. She's like, it does nothing for you.
And prior to 6 months of age, when babies are not interested in food, the only way you could get the rice cereal in them is by shoving it down their mouth. If you wait till they're 6 months of age, they can eat lots of other foods, other sources of carbohydrate.
Actually nutritious for them.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, and then another one that we do offer in moderation are foods, potential sources of mercury. Mm-hmm. So the larger fish, like the EPA and the Department of Health Services in the United States, they recommend against the use of some of those larger, higher mercury fish. I mean, fish is one of the allergenic foods. I want your baby to have fish protein, but there certainly are lower mercury ways you can do that.
Yeah.
We generally say when in doubt, leave it out. We don't do, for example, much canned tuna anymore for babies because there's many other safer ways for them to get that fish protein, to introduce them to fish protein to help reduce the risk of fish allergy down the road without pumping them full of mercury. Again, another heavy metal.
Yeah. I wanted to touch on the difference of gagging versus choking. And I feel like this was my, when I'm talking about all my grandparents that were like, heck no to all of this, it was the gagging that happens and it just like flips them out. Right. And I think it is scary even for maybe first time parents who are just starting this and seeing your baby kind of doing that gag. Can you talk about like the, where the gag reflex is in little babies' mouths and how it is?
And I know you, we talked about like, you know, the pros and the cons of social media, right? We're both running parenting communities. There's certainly benefits to it. There's certainly drawbacks. But I would say one of the most beneficial things for us, we do a lot of video. I run a large Instagram account and a YouTube channel, and seeing babies gag on food and listening to what it hears like.
Yeah.
So seeing and watching a baby gag on food, recover on their own and go right back to eating, that is gold. We have been sharing those videos for 7 years. I mean, parents send, my DMs are full of babies gagging. And other parents say that helped me so much.
Right.
Because when you watch videos of other babies gagging on food and recovering on their own and going right back to eating, it really increases your confidence in your baby's ability to do the same. And the difference between gagging and choking is that gagging is a natural and necessary part of learning how to eat. Where choking, of course, is a life-threatening condition that requires intervention.
Right.
But with gagging, what's happening is your baby is learning how to handle and maneuver something besides infant milk in their mouth. It's time to do it. They want to do it. They can bring it to their mouth. Nutritionally, they start needing a little bit more from foods, but they never had anything in there except infant milk. So if the food gets too far in the back of their mouth for them right now, the way they recover from that and protect themselves is to gag. And they do gag early on when they're learning how to eat until they become proficient at eating. And you can expect gagging to usually starts around 6 months. And it, for some children, can go until 12 months of age and mm-hmm. sometimes even beyond that. I have one kid that still gags on cantaloupe, I feel like, at five. But like the reality with the gagging is there's noise. They're sputtering, they're coughing, they turn red or pink. It's uncomfortable to watch and uncomfortable for the baby to experience. But the baby needs to get over that on their own, and they certainly can.
It's kind of like falling down when you're learning how to walk.
That is the best analogy out there, Abby. We don't rush in when our babies are learning how to walk. It's ugly, right? They bump, they fall down, they fall on their bottom. But you don't run in and stop them from learning.
You're like, oh, you're okay. Keep going.
Exactly. Yeah. And with gagging, because there is that air passing through, and you can hear them, you can hear that noise that they're making. You see them. They recover, they pick the food up, and they eat again. With choking, it's different, right? A choke will be silent. It's why you never, ever leave your baby unattended at the high chair because you are not going to hear your baby choke. It's why you never feed your baby in the stroller. You do not feed your baby in a rear-facing car seat. Those are the angles, actually, in a stroller and in a rear-facing car seat. It's exactly the angle that opens up the airway and increases the risk of choking. We want your baby seated in what I call the 3x90 position, a 90-degree angle at their waist, a 90-degree angle at their knees, and a 90-degree angle at their ankles where their feet are resting flat on the solid foot plate. Those babies who are sitting upright and bring the food to their mouth, if they gag, they get over it on their own. It does not require intervention. But with choking is a very rare but real risk. And I remind parents that there's no higher risk of choking when you start solids with a baby-led approach compared to conventional spoon feeding, provided that the parents are educated about reducing choking risk. So we do lots of education about that, and also always recommend that parents take an infant refresher CPR course before they start solid foods. Because if your baby chokes on food, CPR will save your baby's life. Right. But with choking, it's silent. The baby is blue or purple. There's no air passing through, and CPR is the required intervention there.
Yeah. Is there any instance when maybe we should do like the finger swipe of food? Is there any instance that we should do that?
So when you take, I teach a choking prevention and response course, and I teach it with a speech language pathologist and a certified CPR instructor, and they talk more about this, but that yes, swiping food is part of the recovery process if the baby's actually choking. But unless the baby is actually choking, there's absolutely no reason to go into the mouth.
Right, right. Katie, can you kind of tell us about, I guess, like more about your course and where people can find that and what all is in your program?
So if you're interested in learning more about starting solid foods and letting your baby lead the way, I teach a free 1 hour online video workshop called Baby Led Weaning for Beginners. I love doing podcast stuff. I also host a Baby Led Weaning podcast, and you can share lots of great info there. But seeing really is believing, especially for the grandparents and the partners who might like, I don't really get what this is about. Right. Invite them to the workshop with you. It's free. It's 1 hour. I show you how to do the first 10 days of solid foods, how to prep a lot of these foods and make them safe. Plus, I give everyone on that workshop a copy of my 100 first foods list so you can walk away. I don't want you to run out of ideas of foods to feed your baby. I don't want you to get stuck on those simple starter foods or give up and go back to purees or pouches because your baby wants to eat all these foods, and they can if you take advantage of that flavor window. So you can sign up for this week's workshop times and grab a copy of that original 100 first foods list if you go to fortifiedfam.com/you the mother. So it's fortifiedfam.com/you the mother. You can sign up for that week's workshop times. I do a huge Q&A at the end. We make a point to answer every question on the workshop. It's the best place to go if you're an absolute beginner with starting solid foods, like back where you were, Abby, 13 years ago, and you're like, I don't even know where to start. We make it super duper simple for you, and you'll walk away with tons of actionable advice plus 100 foods that your baby can easily eat.
Yeah, and I swear by baby led weaning, because I do think that picky eating can like still come around, right? They come into toddlerhood, they've got opinions and all kinds of stuff, but I do feel like my 3 baby led weaning babies were a lot less picky than my pureed baby.
And that you make the perfect, that's the perfect case for baby-led weaning. Just so everyone knows, when your child enters toddlerhood, starting in the second year of life, all children experience some degree of food neophobia, fear of new foods, and they also start to reject the foods that they previously ate when they were babies. Yeah. And as I mentioned previously, your conventionally spoon-fed baby has maybe 10 or 15 foods under their belt. And if you lose those 10 or 15 foods to picky eating, that becomes a very challenging child to feed. Are the babies that go to feeding therapy.
Yeah.
But if your baby has 100 foods that they can eat and then you lose 10 or 15 of them to picky eating, it's no big deal because you still have 85 or 90 foods that the child will eat. So really do try to push your baby's palate during that all important flavor window. Yes. It feels like a lot of work, but please remember, moms, you have to feed this small person for the next 17 and a half years of its life. You might as well do the work now to help them establish that really, really good foundation with food so that they like eating and you actually enjoy eating meals with them instead of dreading mealtimes, which is what we don't want.
Yeah, we definitely don't want. That's a long time of mealtimes to be dreading.
That's a lot of meals if you do the math.
It really is. Katie, thank you so much for joining me. Can you tell my listeners where they can find you?
So I'm on Instagram at Baby Led Wean Team. My podcast is Baby Led Weaning Made Easy over at blwpodcast.com. And if you want to sign up for that free 1 hour video workshop, Baby Led Weaning for Beginners, where you get the 100 first foods list, that's at fortifiedfam.com/you the mother.
Perfect. I will be linking all of those in the description of this podcast. So be sure to go check that out. Katie, thank you again for joining me and helping me support you, the mother.
Thank you, Abby.
Thanks.